Welcome back. We had the wonderful opportunity not too long ago to attend Under the Stars Nasiha Fundraising Gala to talk to Imam Khalid Latif about his personal experience living in a Trump state. How is his day-to-day life being impacted? How has this political situation inspired and re-energized him to stand up for other social issues like Standing Rock? Before I take you to our both engaging and emotional interview, let me tell you a little bit about Imam Khalid Latif. Imam Khalid Latif is a university chaplain for New York University, executive director of the Islamic Center at NYU, and a chaplain for the NYPD. Here is our interview with him now during his visit to Toronto. Welcome to the show, Imam Khalid.
Thank you for having me.
So I know you flew in here to support the Nasiha Muslim Youth Helpline. Why is that something that's important to you?
Nasiha is important to me, just given the work that I do. I end up seeing a lot of people who are survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, people who are experiencing mental wellness issues, emotional wellness, spiritual wellness, suicidal ideation, personality disorders, relationship issues, grief issues, anything that you could think of makes its way through my doors in some capacity. And I think the idea that individuals can have access to a resource that allows for them to engage somebody of their faith community that is trained and is a professional and is able to help elevate them through some of the realities that they find themselves in to get to where they're fully entitled to be in terms of moving in their life forward, something that's remarkable. These guys, mashallah, are fielding tens of thousands of calls from all over the world, from a lot of people in the United States where I live. I think it's just important to support them in what they're doing.
And do you think it's important for us to have a youth line specific for Muslims like Nasiha?
I do. You know, the way a lot of mental health works is not just based off of your credentials and training, which is a really important part, but people are going to connect to people that they have a certain familiarity with. For individuals to understand the nuances that exist within the Muslim community in terms of race, ethnicity, culture, social class, lived experience, necessitates the person across the table being as familiar as possible. And unfortunately, many people who work in the mental health profession that are not Muslim are not beyond their own stereotypes. You know, they see dress as a symbol of religiosity. So if someone is wearing or not wearing a headscarf, someone has a beard, does not have a beard, is wearing a kufi, is not wearing a kufi, skin color becomes a symbol. And so someone who is not South Asian or not Arab, but is African-American, is Latino, is Caucasian, is somehow engaged differently in terms of their level of religiosity. And so to just know that the person across the table kind of gets what you're going through and not having to explain yourself over and over, or feel as if it's not working for reasons that have nothing to do with counseling, but just the fact that the person is not so acquainted with your experiences, it makes a huge difference.
Now, I know you mentioned a little bit about different racial groups, and I want to take the conversation a little bit different now. You know, Trump recently got elected. I know I was shocked. Were you expecting that to happen?
Towards the end of the election cycle, I thought Trump was going to win.
You did.
And so I didn't feel so shocked.
I have to ask, why did you think that?
I think the reality of people who are pretty disenfranchised with the current establishment, also tied to really the deeply embedded racism that exists in the United States, that I think what people are more shocked by is not his being voted in, but now they can't deny certain realities around systemic and structural racisms that exist. I mean, the country in and of itself is founded upon realities where indigenized populations were killed, pillaged, their land was taken from them. Slavery in and of itself is a reality that the country was built upon, and the treatment of black people until today is something that is undeniably inequitous and oppressive, not just on an individual level, but on an institutionalized level. And I think for many people, what they're becoming more woke to is the idea that race is something that people experience very differently, and they can't pretend any longer that it's not a problem.
What about you in your profession? Do you experience some of that systemic racism? Because I know you're a police chaplain, and you're not a Muslim chaplain. You're a mainstream chaplain.
Yeah, so, I work as a chaplain for the New York City Police Department. I also serve as the university chaplain at NYU. I share the title there with the rabbi, and we have about 60 affiliated chaplains of various religious denominations. And in both capacities, I work with a broader community. The importance of providing just pastoral care to whoever needs it, anyone who's looking for that kind of support. I think whatever I've experienced in terms of policy that infringes upon my rights as a Muslim, I would say pales in comparison to the realities that black people face, especially in the United States. You know, I've traveled to a lot of countries all over the world, and the unfortunate reality is that there's a lot of racism and there's a lot of inequity that exists, racial disparity in pretty much any country that you could think of. But to take the mode of false equivalency and to equate what it is that I would go through or people of my racial or ethnic background go through in a way that somehow undermines like the black experience, I think is really problematic. What I see in terms of my realities is that there are many minority populations that are distinct from my own, who live realities day to day that experientially I have to be able to relent to the idea that I've never gone through what they've gone through.
So I know recently, and it's very interesting to hear a Muslim, you know, talk about different racial groups and the challenges that they're going through. I know off air we spoke briefly about the fact that you just recently attended Standing Rock. So tell me a little bit about that and why you chose to go.
So, you know, we took about 15 students from New York University. Myself, we met Sheikh Dawood Yassin from Zaytuna College, and about a dozen Zaytuna students as well. Linda Sarsour, who's a good friend of mine, came with us also. And I took my wife and my kids as well. And, you know, the importance of it, I think, was to not go and do something, but just to be there to serve the people there. It was really remarkable when you walked in, you know, the indigenous populations, our native brothers and sisters, the chieftains of their tribes were telling everybody who came into the campsite that this is a prayer camp and we're meeting the oppression and inequity with spirituality and with prayer. And I think that was something that we didn't expect going in, but created a different frame, at least for me personally, to really reflect upon my own connection to my faith and spirituality and a connection to tradition. I mean, these were people who had a long-lasting embracement of a tradition, and they understood deeply, you know, our connection to our tradition. And I think to understand where there was a spectrum of behavior in front of us, people who are heavily motivated by greed, the acquisition of wealth, selfishness, who wanted to build this pipeline regardless of what it would do to the water there, what it would do to the land there, how it would disrupt just the ecosystem there. And individuals who are purely there for the sake of saying, we have to stand up for what's right because it's the right thing to do. And I think, to me, it just indicated what real balance is and how the relationship between rightness and wrongness necessitates us not just following up our wrong actions with good actions, but understanding when someone else interjects inequity and oppression into the world, we as Muslims should also be countering their wrongness with that much more rightness. You know, I took my kids there and my students there so that they could understand it doesn't take that much to give up to actually go and be with people. And, you know, they went, they chopped wood, they helped separate donations and clothing, but their role was just to serve the people that were there. My daughter's 3.5, my son is 1. He's not gonna know, you know, we took them there, but when they're older, you know, I could tell them that we didn't just talk about it, like we actually took you there. I don't know why this is making me emotional, but I think a lot of the times, we fail to recognize how it's important for us to live mercy and to live hope and live compassion, and to not be so distracted by the world that we think so much about what we'll lose, but really what we're giving up on in terms of our hearts when we don't move, when we have the ability to.
So
Yeah.
I think you shared a very powerful message about the importance of thinking beyond us as Muslims and thinking for the broader humanity, right? Black Lives Matter, Indigenous issues. So just wrapping up on that note, what advice do you have for every human being, given the political and social climate that we're living in, not just in the United States, but I would go as far as to say even in Canada?
Look, I would tell people who are Muslim in specific that you have to just be yourself. I mean, if we retreat into the boxes that society seeks to put us in, then we're going to see a regurgitated reality over and over. I'm not God. I can't tell you why things happen the way that they do. But Muslims are in a place where we dealt with the reality and are dealing with the reality of individuals who speak in the name of our faith that do not really embody the teachings of compassion, love, and mercy in our faith. And it put us in a place where we didn't know what to do. How do we respond to the realities of ISIS? How do we deal with the fact that they're killing more Muslims than anybody else? There's not going to be anything worse than this than we experience. And then sometime later, like Donald Trump got elected, and everybody said, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to Muslims, and what are we going to do, and it's going to ruin our world and set us back however many decades and centuries. God is going to keep putting challenges in front of us until we recognize our ability and potential to meet those challenges. I'm not going to live in reaction to somebody else's perspectives on who it is that I'm supposed to be, and to embody a set of attitudes and principles that only make me accepted when I turn into something that I'm not. And so to be Muslim is to just go out and be Muslim. And I would say that to any minority population at this point, that where you have salient frames to your identity, embrace yourself and love yourself and go out and be the best version of you. And when somebody tells you that you need to be in a box, let yourself understand that if you allow for yourself to be in that box, then you're just giving them victory. And we need each one of us right now to move forward at a place that we're comfortable with, and to just offer people a different reason to have hope in this world and never a reason to really dread it.
Thank you for a very hopeful message, Imam Khalid. Really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Hey YouTube, we hope you benefited from this video. If you liked it, or if you didn't, let us know in the comments below. And if you're interested in learning more, check out some of our other videos. And don't forget to subscribe so you can get new videos every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.